Peace be upon the listener. My name is Rais Toluca, aka the Film Abbot, aka the Stephen A. Smith of spirituality, aka the Van Jones of vitriol, aka the Don Lemon of discipline, aka the Muhammad Ali of meditation, aka the Confucius of concentration. And I come to you guys as a humble servant, and I would like to say first and foremost, welcome back. For my first time listeners, you're in for a ride and a surprise. And for my long time listeners, I'm sorry it's been so long. I got a story to tell, but the story might not be that interesting for those who are first timers, but bear with me as I sit back and I unwind this saga and this narrative. Where to begin? I can say that it's been a while, but that would be an understatement once again. But it has been. You know, over the past 2 years, I've just been experiencing and living life and trying to evolve into the next version of myself to the best way I possibly can. And a lot of that, I believe, stems from my belief. My primary belief that you can't grow while in the eye of many people, or even a few people. The best time for growth is when you're away. And I've been away, but I've been having a great time being away. You know, sometimes I forget to realize, and often I think we all do that. Reality goes on, man, whether or not we give it permission to. And reality has been going on. And I know that sounds a little vague, but I want to give the honest truth. I think, let me slow down. Firstly, how the hell are you? How the hell are you guys? It's been so long, man. There's going to be a couple changes I'm seeking to do this weekly. Hopefully I can hold to that at least. Doing this weekly is probably going to be the best thing for me. And I have written here in my notes that this isn't a show. And I, even as I wrote that down in my notes, I'm trying to articulate what that means to me. And for fuck's sake, what is that going to mean for you guys? Excuse my French. I believe for me, saying that it isn't a show, it means that this isn't for entertainment, but rather it's for value. The production value is going to be straightforward. In the past, when I was thinking about podcasting and speaking into this microphone and being as good as it as I can possibly be, I usually got caught up in the humdrum of production value, being entertaining. And if I can be so clear and frank, I really don't give a damn about that right now. Right now, that's not of my concern. And I believe that concern is wrapped up inside of a deeper complex that I have and that many people have, the need to perform and entertain. And I know for me, I realize that I'm tired of performing, and maybe it's just a nexus point that I am entering in my life, but I'm more so involved, for me personally, with truth. Every single day, I wake up, I look out into the world, and I see bullshit. I see bullshit, and the reason why I see bullshit externalized is because I can see bullshit internalized. I know when I'm bullshitting myself. Now the question is, do you know when you are bullshitting yourself? The world is entrenched inside of this bullshit game, and it's bothersome to me. It's bothersome to me. And the only reason why it's bothersome to me is because if there is bullshit on the horizon, there is bullshit in the center. Projecting outward into the world. And before, I used to project outwards into the world and be so frustrated at the bullshit I saw. And the reason why And when I say bullshit, let me quickly determine and define what I mean by bullshit. What I mean by bullshit is the performances that encapsulate reality are extrapolated across multiple avenues. No matter what industry you enter into, there's some level of showmanship and performance going at hand. Carl Jung, the great psychologist, classified this as the persona. And the persona is that thing that we use, that we put on to interface with the world. It's the mask we wear when we leave our house. The Japanese quantified that everybody has three personalities. There's the personality you show to your family. There's the personality that you reserve for your lover. And there's a personality you show no one. And excuse me, there's also the personality that you show to the world. Maybe I'm mistaking that. Maybe there is no personality to show to your lover. Family and lover are the same personality. The three personalities are the personality that you show to your family, lover included, the personality that you show to the world, and the personality you show no one. Those are the three layers of personality that we engage in every day. And this cycle of performance is something that I was entrenched in the last 2 years. You know, in the last 2 years, I involved myself in all avenues of public service, whether it's activism, politics, you and everything in between, you name it. And for my involvement inside of those avenues of public service, because truthfully, I really care about the future of humanity, the consciousness that we are all eating from, the trough of reality. I'm really, really deeply fascinated and worried about where we're going. And in my activities in the past 2 years, I tried to figure out the best way to find solutions for this damning state that we are entering. And I'm worried and I'm troubled. Because I know I'll be fine. Because I'm attached to God. I'm attached to a belief that is greater than even my own understanding. A belief that even when I was in my lowest state, I was able to lean on that belief, lean on that subordination to a higher divine self and find ground beneath my feet again. But I know not everybody has that wherewithal. That wherewithal to know that, damn it, there is a greater alignment at play that I can't see, but I trust with all of my body. That I am divine and I am protected and I am covered. We don't recognize that in everyday life. Because reality is not pitched in that direction. It's pitched in a superficial direction. And excuse me, this episode is going to feel a little ranty, a little pastor in the pulpit-y. But I have to get my shit off. I have to speak my truth just a little bit. Because I was pissed off for a while. I was pissed off, I must admit, and no, it's not zen of me to be pissed off, but I recognized me being calm all the time was a version of the performance. I'm pissed off, and I'm disappointed. Not at anybody or anything, but at principles more than anything. And principles are abstract concepts that we can't really hold. We can only see the fruit of. And I see the fruit of principles every day because I stare long and hard at reality to see how it affects me. And even with this podcast, I'll barely be promoting it. I probably won't promote it at all, much to the chagrin of my partner. My partner wants me to be a star. But I'm not really interested in being famous or being acknowledged or being respected or being appreciated. I'm going to be me to the day I die. I just like to talk and like to work my thoughts out. And I realize that this is the best way for me to talk and work my thoughts out. And I like to understand my thoughts. I was in doing my research of self. I came across the understanding that I read so much, I study so much. And one of the problems with modern day society that I've come to understand is that we feel so entitled to other people's ideas. And the limits of reality, the limits of reality are such that we feel so entitled to ideologies in which we sacrifice no blood and treasure in making those ideologies a reality. Like the other day, 2 days ago, was the 4th of July. American Independence. Can anybody tell me when we started hating 4th of July? Like, honestly, somebody, tell me when we started hating 4th of July. When did it start being cool and chic to hate 4th of July? I'm waiting. I don't mean to scold anybody, but this is what I feel, man. A lot of this shit is performative. It's fake. It's faux revolutionary. It ain't real change. It ain't real thought. How do you come across viewing the 4th of July as a white supremacist holiday needing to be dismantled and destructed and replaced by something like Juneteenth when it's all is made up? Now, I understand if you approach 4th of July from the angle in which it's bullshit because all holidays are bullshit, conglomerate, capitalist, manufactured days of celebration. I understand that. But don't have vitriol for 4th of July simply because you believe you're supposed to due to your ethnic roots. It's cheap. It's a false reality. Because none of this shit matters. This is about consciousness and evolution. 4th of July is just a day. Just like anything else. And some people are going to stop the discussion there. Oh, you're tripping. We were slaves during 4th of July. Motherfucker, we slaves right now. We're slaves to ideology. We're slaves to isms. We're slaves to ideas of success. We're slaves to it all. And I do believe a little bit of us enjoys our slavery, my brothers and my sisters. A little bit of us enjoys our slavery. Because I've told myself I'm going to stop speaking in the first person pronoun as much as possible. So let me say we. We've been engaged in a culture war for about 5 years now. But the revolution that Gil Scott Heron spoke about in the 1970s, when he said the revolution will not be televised, has been happening since 1965 at least. And the revolution of human consciousness has been going on since the time of Moses, my brothers and sisters. This is not a new fight. This is not a new fight. But what is happening today is that the performers are exiting stage left. But it's easy to perform in this climate. See, that's the part of the conversation that we are refusing to talk about. The performers get flowers and roses thrown on stage, get affirmation and adulation, applause. And we think that that's the way to do it. We do the bare minimum and receive the maximum. Ha! The lights are on us. It's crazy to think about. And let me tell y'all something. Y'all listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but let me tell you something. This to me isn't even a podcast. I'm one of these crazy bastards. And I mean crazy in the most endearing way that can turn on this microphone, no guest, no whistles, no tap dance, and I can talk to y'all straight for an hour without blinking. Without blinking. The reason being is because I really do this. I really do this. And I can keep y'all wrapped into what I'm saying for an hour. And if you choose not to be here, I don't mind either. If I end up just talking to myself at the end of this, I don't mind. Because I am trying to get to truth. I was talking to my friends not too long ago about the foundation of this country. And how the foundation of this country, let me rewind a little bit. And this is circling back. I want to put a button on the 4th of July thing. Because the 4th of July thing has a huge tie-in to the fundamental attribution of what many believe to be the founding principles of this nation. And one of the fundamental misattributions of the founding principles of this nation is power. We tend to believe in this country, and I'm open to seeing other perspectives and other sides of this, and I'm trying to work out all of these thoughts and theories as I speak to you guys, so bear with me. These aren't formed fully. We're going on this journey together. Many people believe that the fundamental structure that created this country was power. And white supremacist power at that. And it's easy to believe because the founding fathers were white. Founding fathers were wealthy. And the founding fathers enslaved. So, it's fair to assume that this country was founded upon white wealth and slavery. And that everything that is coincided inside of this system has to do with white wealth and slavery. You know, there's three tenets to a system. And I want y'all to remember this. Whenever you see any type of system at play, any kind of system. Tenet number one, a good system captures human nature. Okay? What that means is there's a part inside of our physiology that enjoys certain aspects of being alive. There's the dopamine responses, there's oxytocin. Feelings of love encapsulate a lot of the biochemistry. See, love isn't just love, right? Love is a biochemical experience that involves hormonal responses with physical experience. So, a good system captures human nature. It captures physiology inside of its design. It's why when you see social media, you see Instagram or Twitter, likes and replies give a dopamine response. That's how you know it works, because it gives rewards. You know, you go to some websites these days in 2021, you go to some websites, like I was on LendingTree the other day. And when you're about to leave LendingTree, when you're about to exit LendingTree, it makes a pop-up and says, sorry to see you go. Or if you go to your email and you subscribe to any newsletter, the friendly language in which a lot of these emails are written as if they're your buddy, or these subscription services, you know, I deleted my Instagram about twice, two times. And the reason why I deleted my Instagram twice is because I just wasn't getting anything from it. Sometimes I get bored. I get bored really easily with social media. It's the same thing. Same thing. I'm going to give my own deep dive on another episode about my feelings towards social media overall, but it's the same thing every day. It's like, how much can you get from it really if it's not like your business, right? And so I tried to delete it two times, and just the deletion process is interwoven in so much. You have to find the deactivation button. But you would think, like any other appliance or utility, the power, the on and off switch, is easily available. No. Could you imagine if you used a remote on your television and the power button was inside the battery hatch? In order to turn on and off your television, you had to take the batteries out every time. You would be like, yo, they must not want me to turn off my television. How strange. Or when you have to cancel a subscription to a service, it's buried inside of the settings somewhere. How strange. So, that's to dissuade you from figuring out how to deactivate service. Because if it was easy, if it was in front of your face every day, of course you'll deactivate the service. So, the number one tenet of a system has to capture human nature. You have to study people in order to make a system. Number two, reproduces results. Any system reproduces results. What does that mean? That means what happens in a system is intended to happen in a system. I'm gonna say that again. What happens in a system is intended to happen in a system. So let's take society at large. We have a massive amount of poverty. Or let's look at homelessness, for example, in America. Should America be touted as a great nation if there are homeless on the streets? Should it? I say no, because when we see homeless on the streets, that is an indication of the flaw in the system. However, here's where it gets diabolical, ladies and gentlemen. The results were intended. Yes, yes, yes. So capitalism exists to make people stack at the bottom. It's not meant for everybody to succeed. The results are reproducible. Time and time again, we're going to have millionaires and homeless people. So long as capitalism exists, people get paid hundreds of millions of dollars to solve homelessness, yet and still homelessness exists. You can go on Glassdoor and type in these homeless consultants. You can type in head of whatever relation to solving the homeless problem. You can look at their salaries and you say, huh, people are getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to solve homelessness, yet there are still homeless people. What does that mean? The results are reproducible. This isn't supposed to change. And that leads me to number three. The number three characteristic, the third characteristic of a system, is it can't be revolutionized. What that means is when a system can't be revolutionized, that means there's not a lot of change that is allowed to take place within the system. So let's look at prison. In this country, we talk about prison reform. See, reform is cheap language. And the reason why reform is cheap language is because it's not revolution. We talk about prison reform, but how do you revolutionize prison? You get people to not go. You can't revolutionize or reform prison people. It's impossible. It's literally impossible. Reason being is because it's all three of these systems at play. All three characteristics that a system needs in order to be quantified as a system, prison has. It captures human nature. The most aggressive and the most violent end up in jail. Reproduces results. Free labor. And it can't be revolutionized. You can't stop people from being aggressive. So there's going to have to be prison. See, now, what does this have to do with the founding fathers and the inception of this country? Well, I'll tell you. What that means is we are supposed to be under the understanding that the founding fathers inscribed into this country these three tenets in order to make it sustain itself across time. The answer is, yes, they did. But the question that we should be asking is why? Why did the founding fathers build this system? But before we get there, we have to ask, is this country racist? Or why does this country feel racist? And, you know, this is a tough conversation to have, so bear with me as we parse through the language. And these are thoughts that I'm working out too, and I'm open to being wrong. But please, if you're going to critique how right or wrong I am, be prepared for yourself to be right or wrong in the critique of my critique. So why is this country racist? Well, because black people are disproportionately affected by the rules and regulations that take place in this nation. That is true. You are disproportionately beaten down by the oppressive nature of this country. Now we have to ask ourselves, was that an intended consequence of this system? Was race inscribed inside of the dictums of this nation? Perhaps because the founders were white. Did they always intend for white people to be the dominant group inside of this nation? I don't know. But is this country inherently wicked? I don't know. But what I do know is this country captures human nature pretty well. And the reason why it does is because capitalism is the engine which fuels this thing. And I don't mean to sound pessimistic, but the only way to revolutionize this thing is not going to come from marches and protests. It's not going to come from crying on the internet. It's a consciousness thing. We have to accept certain aspects of reality as certain aspects of reality. So, the founding of this nation, what was the primary rationale behind establishing America? Slavery could be defined as a byproduct of the founding of the nation, its original sin, so to speak. But what I will say is, in contrast to that, the founding of this nation was rooted inside of truth, the pursuit of truth. And what we do see, because this is why it's so duplicitous to engage inside of any conversation regarding this nation without some level of honesty to it. Because I will say, if this nation was rooted in power, then what we just experienced with the last president would be him still being in office, because the system would be built to allow the powerful to stay powerful. But what it does do is it removes people from power rather swiftly. And then we're caught in a crosshairs, a dialectical crosshairs, a hegemonic crosshairs, so to speak, because we're now engaged in a system of opposites. So is power concentrated in the individual, or is power concentrated in the mass? So again, if this country was founded inside of power, if that is its a priori structure, is power and the accumulation of it, then that would mean that the president would be the most powerful person on the planet. Yes? Can we at least agree that the president would be the most powerful person on the planet if this country was founded in power? But it's not, because the president is not the most powerful person in this country, nor is he the most powerful person on the planet. And if you disagree with that, then let me refer you to the first half of this conversation, where I'm talking about fake adulation, applause, and the persona. The president is a mask of power. I mean, I've never seen it so obvious before in my life with our current president, Joseph. See, Joseph has a negligible history at best. Joseph is a poor representation of our needs as a community. But if the president, and it's almost as if when Joseph walks around, he is a walking representation of the limitations of this country. This is a frail, possibly senile, stumbling old man, right? He doesn't look powerful at all. And his lack of physical power almost translates to his lack of figurative power. What power does Joseph have? Like, really ask yourself that. Could Joe, and if the president was powerful, like truly powerful, by me talking about Joseph, I'd be killed. Because that's power. That's true power. So again, if this country was founded inside of something truly malevolent, something based inside of some sinister, abstract accumulation of power, then the president would be all powerful. We see that's not the case. See, and this is why it's so fucked up. When you adhere and attach yourself to ideology, you can't look at things for truth. This country is not rooted in power. It's rooted in truth. Because the truth of the matter is, we can tell the truth about the president. The truth of the matter is, we can have honest conversations about what's wrong in this country that are trying to claw towards the truth. You can't do that in Russia. You follow me? You can't do that in North Korea. You can't do that in China. So, the founding fathers, and I'm not even caping for these gentlemen. I'm only caping for one thing and one thing only. And that is, the denigration of this country comes at a great cost. The denigration of reality comes at a great cost. See, what I'm saying is bigger than this country. This has to do with reality itself. We are in the midst of reality being rewritten. Reality is being rewritten. And it's being compressed into a miniature version of itself, abstracted by limited research and by limited knowledge. So you can approximate truth. But approximated truth is subjectivity. And when you approximate truth, you limit your ability to completely dive into what could be real. And you stop at what is real for you. And what is real for each and every one of us is just a peephole into reality itself. So, bringing it back to the Founding Fathers, why is this of importance? Because the Founding Fathers understood the limits of power and the limits of truth. And so I'm open to saying that the Founding Fathers had a little bit of a understanding of what it meant to be powerful after having been oppressed. And this is like pseudo oppression. This is light oppression by Britain. And so they sought to free themselves from that oppression. And if there's one thing that I do know about oppression, is that when a group of people are oppressed inside of this system, it's only a short amount of time until they find someone else to oppress. And that is where slavery comes in. See, even in the Black community, you look around yourself. We're an oppressed people. Or let's believe that we're an oppressed people. Let's go down that rabbit hole of rhetoric. We're an oppressed people. Let's participate in the dominant narrative of Western society today. Black people are an oppressed people. And then from that point of view, we say Black people are an oppressed people. But if there's one thing about oppression, and if there's one thing about psychology, period, there's what's called displacement. And with displacement, what that means is, what displacement does is, you ever experienced somebody who had a really bad day at work? And when they had a really bad day at work, they don't vent to you about their bad day at work. They're just really mean to you. They take their anger out on you. See, that's the cycle of oppression, my brothers and sisters. When you are angry, you take out your anger on someone else. It's because the threat to you is so grandiose, so large, and the risk of you facing that threat are so high that you dare not do it. So you displace your anger onto a more vulnerable entity. That's why fathers, when they have a bad day at work, they come home and they assault their wives or assault their children, because they dare not beat their boss. They dare not stand up for themselves at work. And that's where they say, hurt people hurt people. And that's when they say, the oppressed eventually becomes the oppressor. Not years down the line, but in the immediate present, the oppressed becomes the oppressor. So let's take a look at our community. Let's put a mirror up to reality. Let's not point the finger outwardly. Let's point it inwardly. What inside of our community is being oppressed currently today? Women. Women are being oppressed inside of our community. What is happening with women being oppressed inside of our community? Women are then subconsciously oppressing men in return. There's a large fight for masculinity to come back inside of our community. That's why there's always a battle of the sexes intermingling inside of the Black community. Men hating women, women hating men. And then out in the corner, you have gay men getting hated by both. You see, like, this is the nature of reality. We have houses made of glass resting on top of a sand foundation. Nothing is stable. Nothing. Now, what we can do is we can articulate the sense of stability that we need. We can try to figure out how to gain it, but it won't happen by pointing fingers. It won't happen by curtailing to the dominant narrative, by removing complexity from these matters. These matters are incredibly complex. We can't remove complexity. And when we remove complexity, we do it at our own peril. We're playing a dangerous game in 2021. A game in which I don't know how far we can go. And I think that adds to my increased sense of urgency in just talking out loud, because somebody may benefit from this, I don't know. But what I do know is we have a short window of time to access the internet and all of its powers. I don't know how long we got, people. I don't know what big tech is going to do with our data. Excuse me. But if we're going to think that it's going to be all jolly, all easy for us to exist within this paradigm freely forever without any cost, you're surely mistaken. The cost is on its way. And you can best believe that the powers that be are articulating to themselves different modes of subjugation. Because the internet may, you know, one of the things I used to say early on in this podcast is that the internet democratized success. The internet comes with the democratization of success. And it has come to my understanding that the democratization of success that the internet held has been a threat to the powers that be since success has been democratized. See, systems, like I said, systems have three characteristics: capture human nature, reproduce results, and can't be revolutionized. Can't. And with those three in vogue, if everybody has access to liberate themselves from the shackles of oppression via the internet, what do you think the negative effects of that are going to be? You don't think the CIA, the FBI, the NSA has calculated the best way to put a squash on democratized success? It's only a matter of time, but we have to start thinking and operating as such, like we're operating on borrowed time. These are infrastructures that we don't even know. People's values, people's entire values are predicated upon an infrastructure in which we don't own. And then if they just remove this one piece of the infrastructure from the entire machine, what do we have? What do we have? You know, I was thinking about something the other day. I was thinking about the idea of work ethic, you know? Work ethic, and how that phrase has been beaten inside of our subconscious for probably the entirety of our lives. You know, that person has a poor work ethic. Their work ethic is poor. They don't want success because they have a poor work ethic. Well, what does that really mean? Right? Ethic implies values. Values imply culture. Culture is specific. So if somebody has a poor work ethic, that means you're saying they have poor values. If somebody has poor values, that means you're saying they have poor culture. If somebody has poor culture, what does that mean? What does that mean? And so we tie this all into the idea of what the internet represents in relation to the commodification of freedom. And I know to some people this might not hurt, but some people it may hurt. You're not as free as you think you are. You're not as free. But you're more beautiful than you ever imagined you can be. But if your values are rooted in something that can be taken away from you at any moment, then you're not free. You get me? You are beautiful. And you are beautiful when you realize you are free. But you can only realize that you're free. Here's the oxymoron. You can only realize that you are free when you realize you're not as free as you think you are. It's like, I don't even know if I should be saying this. I had a realization not too long ago. And I had a realization while I was meditating that I am a product. We all are products of millions and millions of years worth of successful reproduction. Let's not take that for granted. What does that mean? The odds of you being born, I believe, are 4 trillion to 1. So, you being here is a quantification of cosmic reality. So, your ancestors, not your grandmother and grandfather. This is where we are trapped inside of the paradigm of reality. And this is where we're not as free as we think we are, but we're more free than we can ever be. Stretch it back. This is why we should appreciate our beauty. You are a result of millions of years worth of genetic reproductive success. Your life is not a product of 2 generations or 3 generations. I know you're probably mad at your mother. You're mad at your father. Your mother's probably mad at your grandmother, probably mad at your grandfather. But extrapolate it outwards. How could you be mad that you're here? Because it's almost implausible for you to exist. You had an ancestor who walked, ran, and existed in the same era as Jesus. Your ancestor may not be one of the 12 tribes of Judah. I don't know about that. I'm not a black Israelite. I'm not a Hebrew Israelite. But in order for you to be here today, you have to have connections to back then. That is the miracle of being alive, my brothers and sisters. That is huge. That is amazing. That is impeccable. Do not take that for granted. But the infrastructure that reality is based upon, it doesn't allow us to celebrate that miracle of being alive. This reality is far more complex than we give it credit of being. And I believe my biggest problem with reality today is that we offer low resolution solutions to high resolution problems. I was talking to the homies the other day just about this very concept of revolutionaries and activism. You have 20-somethings believing that they can rewrite a system that was created very thoroughly, very thoroughly, by Enlightenment thinkers. And Enlightenment thinkers, these are thinkers. The founding fathers are thinkers. Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, John Adams. These are thinkers who spent a majority of their time thinking through these very complex issues. James Madison, these very complex issues of freedom, of truth, of discovery. A lot of them invested inside of the occult. A long intellectual tradition that founded this country. And you have 20-year-olds with bachelor's degrees thinking, I can think up a better system than them. Boy, if you don't, sit down. Humbly. I mean this with all due respect. Sit down, my brother. Sit down, my sister. Sit down. This fight is bigger than you. This fight is bigger than you. And it's okay. What you need to do on the other end of this microphone is figure out how to revolutionize yourself. That's what you need to do. Because that's what I'm doing. And like I said, I've been to every avenue of public service. And the one thing that I realize in all of these avenues is that people fail to revolutionize themselves. It is the one hurdle. For some reason, we can come up with all these theories of how to change this, how to change that. We need to fix this. We need to fix that. Maybe we should. But when it comes to saying, yo, fam, what could you do to fix your life?
I don't know.
Exactly. How do you become a better individual? How do you recognize the beauty within yourself? No answers. Because when we externalize the problem, we never internalize the solutions, baby. That's going to be all for me, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't know, my name is Rice DeLuca, aka the Film Abbot, aka the Stephen A. Smith of Spirituality, aka the Don Lemon of Discipline, aka the Van Jones of Vitriol. I'm here with one thing and one thing only. There's only one thing on my mind when I come and I record this podcast. That's to speak truth to power and power to truth. They're not mutually exclusive. They both go hand in hand. I think the history of reality is being rewritten right before our eyes. And the powers that be are using social media and our human nature to do it to us. And a lot of the time we don't even realize that we're being kept in a constant state of discord because they know the habits in which we participate in. We're going to only go so far when it comes to taking the mask off. We're never going to fully take the mask off. No pun intended. Next episode, I'm going to talk about COVID. All about it. And maybe some more of the things. And I don't even want to call it an episode. Next transmission. Next conversation. Next lecture. I don't know what I'm going to call these things. I'm just here talking. And again, if you care to listen, thank you. If you don't care to listen, I love you. I appreciate you for who you are. We're all in this together. We're all going along this journey, learning and trying to figure out the best way to go about being alive in the 21st century. And truthfully, I'm just trying to lay the groundwork for my grandchildren, man, and my great grandchildren. All that other stuff, I cannot care less about. Revolution, I'm revolutionizing myself every day. I'm trying to grow and be a better person. I'm trying to give to myself. I'm trying to love on myself. That's all I really focus on every day. When I wake up and when I go to sleep, I ask myself one question and one question only. How can I turn my beliefs into action? Because you can believe everything you want to believe. You can believe in Jesus. You can believe in Muhammad. You can believe in Buddha. You can read the Tibetan Book of the Dead. You can read the Quran. You can read the Bible. But if your beliefs aren't translated to action, baby girl, baby boy, you don't believe in nothing. You believe in nothing. You best get your beliefs in order. And let me also say this. If you dislike me, I love you. If you like me, I love you. I'm here for all of us. If I said something throughout the duration of this podcast, this conversation that offended you, I tell you to think about it more. We can have a conversation about it. I'm here to have a dialogue. I'm not here to have a monologue. I'm not here to have anything else. I'm here to have a dialogue, a trilogue, or a quadrilogue. We can have four of us talk. We can have five of us talk. We have three of us talk. I don't have all the answers. I'm here to find them. I'm going on a deep, deep discovery. I'm a human being. I'm a man looking to transcend. And if I haven't responded to your conversation, your phone call, or your text messages, I apologize. You know, I recognize that life is short. Life is short. And the whole of existence is being kind to each other. The whole of existence is respecting the boundaries laid in our realities. I have to respect your boundaries and you have to respect mine, brothers and sisters. And let me tell y'all one thing, man. Let me leave y'all with one piece of advice. And let me also read one scripture for you guys. The one piece of advice I will say, and it's not even going to sound like hoity-toity or anything like that. It's really practical, right? My one piece of advice to you guys is to establish boundaries and stick with them. Establish boundaries and stick with them. Because people love testing boundaries. People love it. People do it subconsciously. People don't even mean to test boundaries and make you feel uncomfortable. I truly believe that. But if you have a boundary, stick to it. Know your worth. Know you are God. Know you are God. Hey, also, we're going to talk about some shit. I got to keep it a beam. We're going to talk about some shit. We're going to talk about a lot of things that are going to make you uncomfortable. They're going to make me uncomfortable. We're going to talk about them together with truth, with candor, with honesty. There is no hate here, baby. There's only love. But we're going to figure it out as a team, as a unit. Those who care, come along. Those who are afraid, stay until you're ready. Where's my book? Where's my book here? So I can read y'all this really quickly, man. If y'all not interested in hearing this, feel free to vacate the premises. Leave the classroom. You will not be hated for it if you leave the classroom. All right. Where are you? Give me 1 second. All right. This is from the Dhammapada, which is a collection of sayings the Buddha said in verse form, and it's one of the most widely read and best known Buddhist scriptures. And this is the scripture on joy. Live in joy, in love, even among those who hate. Live in joy, in health, even among the afflicted. Live in joy, in peace, even among the troubled. Look within, be still. Free from fear and attachment, know the sweet joy of the way. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Rice Toluca. It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys. Thank you for giving me an hour of your time. I will see you guys next week. Inshallah.